This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. Now, I always love a good countdown show. So when the TriDot Director of Performance Science came to me and said, how about we do a show where I give people the best ways to stay healthy during race season? I said, absolutely. Let's make it a countdown. So here we are with two TriDot experts joining us to talk through 10 tactics for staying healthy during race season. Joining us for this is Dr. BJ Leeper. BJ graduated from the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with a doctorate in physical therapy and rehabilitation science. He's a board-certified orthopedic specialist, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, and a USA Triathlon Level 1 coach. He specializes in comprehensive movement testing and is an avid triathlete himself with over 50 tries under his belt. BJ now serves full-time as TriDot's Director of Performance Science. BJ, thanks for the awesome suggestion for today's show.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. It'll be fun to talk about it. A lot of times in triathlon, we talk about it's not just about making it to the finish line, but getting to the starting line. And that's what this topic definitely alludes to. So it'll be exciting to talk about.
Also joining us for this to kind of weigh in with a coach perspective is Coach John Mayfield. John is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who leads TriDot's athlete services, ambassador, and coaching programs. He's coached hundreds of athletes ranging from first-timers to Kona qualifiers and professional triathletes. John has been using TriDot since 2010 and coaching with TriDot since 2012. John, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Always good to be on with BJ. I've been learning from BJ for upwards of a decade now. Always good stuff. Things I can use, things I can implement into my coaching. So looking forward to hearing more from BJ.
I do want to say here at the top of the show, Coach John Mayfield is usually on one of our professional Yeti microphones to sound nice and crisp and clear in his audio. John Mayfield today is on his AirPods because he, if you remember a few shows back from the time that we're doing this show, I mentioned in the warm-up question that my dream would be to have my podcast microphone be signed by Mike Riley and Bob Babbitt. Well, John and Joanna and Amy heard that, and John got hit. He took his own Yeti microphone to Ironman Des Moines and had Mike Riley sign it. He then mailed his Yeti microphone to Bob Babbitt, who then signed it and mailed it to me. So all of a sudden one day I got a UPS package on the door with a Yeti microphone signed by Bob Babbitt and Mike Riley that is now sitting on my desk in my house. And so until we get John a new Yeti microphone today, he is on his AirPods. Still sounds pretty good, but just want to throw that out there for folks who are used to the beautiful, deep, booming, sultry voice of John Mayfield on the show. So thanks for that, John.
I don't know about all that, but those guys were so gracious in doing that. When I reached out to them, they were both like, absolutely, let's do it. And yeah, I mean, it's a pretty light ask for them just to sign it, but yeah. I could tell like they were excited about it. I sent them a clip of the podcast and they listened to it. And yeah, they were super excited to do that. So I appreciate those guys. As always, as you mentioned, they're the storytellers of our sport and such good guys that are involved and they care about people. And they were so excited to do that. So that was fun. So I don't always love our warm-up questions, but I got to say that one is now my favorite warm-up question.
Well, I'm Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up questions, settle in for our main set topic, and then wind things down with our cool down. Extremely excited to announce that Two Toms is a new partner of TriDot. Two Toms is always working on revolutionary new products designed to prevent chafing, blisters, odors, and sweat. Their passion is to keep you moving. As triathletes, we can certainly have our training and racing thrown off by not taking care of our skin. So when the folks at Two Toms told us that they had the best chafing and blister protection products on the market, we had to give them a shot. In fact, we took a huge goodie bag of Two Toms anti-chafing towelettes with us to our last TriDot Ambassador Camp, And we asked for our ambassadors to give honest and candid feedback on the products. The reviews from those 70-plus tried-out athletes were just immensely positive, with many folks placing orders that very day and making the switch to Two Times products. Ever since, I've been using Sports Shield in my own training and have had just great results with happy skin in all the right places. Two Toms has Sport Shield, Blister Shield, Butt Shield, Foot Shield, and stink-free odor-removing spray and detergent. So whoever you are and whatever skin protection you need, Two Toms has you covered. Two Toms is in the Metadyne family of brands, so go to Metadyne.com to pick up some Two Toms today. And when you do, use promo code TRIDOT for 20% off your Two Toms order.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
There are some try items that we have to replace fairly often, but then there are some others that can last quite a long time. The longer you are a triathlete, the more your gear becomes a hodgepodge of what is brand new and what is old, but still good to rock and roll. BJ, John, for our warm-up question today, just from your time in the sport of triathlon, what piece of gear that you still actively use as a triathlete is the oldest? John Mayfield, I'll go to you here.
See, as I mentioned, I don't always love the warm-up questions, not because they're not great. I love when other people have to answer them. I always struggle to come up with good answers for them. And I've been racking my brain and even looking around my my pain cave here thinking, sure, what's old? And I think I'm kind of at this like state of my triathlon career where I had a lot of stuff that I like maxed out the life of. And that was like 2 years ago. So I have like a whole bunch of stuff
That's brand
that I've
new.
Replaced in probably the last 2 years, because like I was there, like everything was done. I'm not always the one to go get the newest, fanciest thing. I'm more so like it's eventually going to break and I'll replace it then. So one thing that came to mind, and this was my oldest thing for a long, long time, was my old Garmin Edge 500 bike computer.
Okay.
I got that like is pretty much early on in as soon as I got into the sport. And I used that thing for probably 10 years. There were a lot of bike computers had come in, new functionality like touchscreens and maps and all sorts of things. And I had just the basic power, speed, all that. It was new enough to have power on it, but it was super old school, but it worked. And then just one day it didn't work anymore. So I upgraded that. My cycling shoes I used for years. One, just because they're so darn expensive. And they were literally like falling apart to where like I had to buy them. So that was like probably a year ago. I got some new shoes, and then my bike. Rode my last bike for probably 8 years. And I ride quite a bit. I do quite a bit of indoor training, and that's gotta be like, you know, a 3-to-1 ratio wear and tear on the bike, just with all the sweat and stuff that ends up on it. But, yeah, so I don't really have anything that's all that old now, but over the years, I've had some stuff that has served well.
We could probably say that your specialized shiv that you just replaced with your new Argon 18, it's still actively in use because now it's your trainer bike.
Yep. So that's probably it. And I was looking like the pedals on it. I don't know, those pedals may be even older than the bike. there's probably some accessories around too.
Sure.
I think maybe like my rear hydration that's on my current bike. I did pull that off the old bike. So it's several years old. So I mean, I've got a lot of stuff that's several years old, but I had some stuff that was like went way back in the day.
Okay. Dr. BJ Leeper, what is this answer for you?
Yeah, this is a good one because I'm slightly embarrassed to admit this, but I started in the sport about 2007, just right before my first son was born, and I immediately got a Cyclops fluid trainer.
Okay.
And yep. I'm proud, but also slightly embarrassed to admit that I'm surrounded by tech gurus like each and every day, but I'm still rocking that old dumb trainer and it just works. I haven't bitten the bullet and upgraded to the new smart trainer yet. But that's
so 15 years old at this point, that trainer.
It's still going. And here in Montana, needless to say, I'm indoors on it a lot, especially in the wintertime. So yep, it just works and I'm still using it.
For me, it is my, I have a Bont Ranger bike pump. I think it was a $50 bike pump that I bought. And literally it was the day before my first triathlon. I was in Bicycles Inc. in Hearst, Texas, buying my first road bike for my very first sprint triathlon happening the next day. And so I didn't have anything. And so I bought the helmet. I bought the cycling shoes. I bought the bike, and I bought a bike pump. And I've since upgraded my helmet. I've since switched to a triathlon bike. I've since switched to nicer tri shoes. And so the one thing for my very first purchase as a cyclist that is still actively being used is that $50 bike pump. And it's still kicking. It still pumps the air. I haven't had a need to replace it and don't foresee a need to replace it. It's got a lot of fun stickers on it now. Anytime I do a race and have an extra kind of helmet sticker or number sticker, I'll put it on the bike pump. And so it's got a lot of tri stickers on it. So that's what this answer is for me. I'm excited to see. I know we've got some new triathletes in the audience. We have some older, more veteran seasoned triathletes in the audience. So I'm excited to hear from you guys. What is the oldest item that is still actively in your rotation as a piece of tri gear? Make sure you're a part of the I'm Trotting Facebook group. We're going to throw this question out to you guys and see what y'all have to say.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
The Tri Dot team has been learning from Oxford University professor Kieran Clark, founder and CEO of T Delta S Global, all about the benefits of drinking the revolutionary Oxford Ketone Ester. Delta G ketone drinks are revolutionizing the way many of us at Tri Dot fuel our triathlon training and racing. The more we've used Delta G drinks, the more we've been struck by the noticeable impact Delta G performance and tactical have on our recovery. As athletes that train almost every day of the week for three different sports, Delta G's boost to recovery is a total game changer for us as triathletes. Try adding just a small serving of ketone ester mixed into your post-workout recovery drink and experience the recovery boost for yourself. The team at Delta G even offers free 15-minute one-on-one consultations where you can learn more about jumpstarting your post-workout recovery with Delta G ketones. You can book a call quick and easy at deltagketones.com. So head to their website, deltagketones.com, to learn more about fueling with ketone esters and to book that free 15-minute consultation. When you place an order, use code TRIDOT20 to get 20% off your Superfuel ketone drinks. There is no day like race day, and part of the fun in being a triathlete is scouting for your next race and planning out your season. But what good is having those races on the schedule if we can't keep our body healthy for race day? And the deeper you get into race season, the more your body is going back and forth with race prep, tapers, races, recoveries, and another race build. Good thing Dr. BJ Leeper and Coach John Mayfield are here to give us 10 tactics for staying healthy during race season. So BJ, the tactics we are going to hear from you today, these are specific to taking care of our body, right? I mean, because there's a lot to taking care of our bodies. That there's proper nutrition, there's proper sleep, there's proper mental health modalities. So in your PT language, what are we focusing on exactly with these 10 tactics today?
Yeah, so there's a lot here. And I think the first thing to do is kind of preface this conversation with a couple things. And, you know, it brings me back to my time in Kansas City when I was working in an outpatient orthopedic and sports medicine clinic there. And we worked with a lot of athletes and high profile athletes. And I remember one specific conversation. I was at a conference. We were working with several members of the Sporting KC team, so the Major League Soccer team in town, and part of their medical staff was at this conference. And our conversation was basically talking about how when their athletes were in performance season, they're not really doing things to quote unquote fix their athletes. They're really just trying to manage them. So mitigate potential injury risks that could take them out of being able to perform. But as far as like correcting potential dysfunctions that they're observing, they knew that during the midst of season, heavy training, heavy performance, they weren't really going to fix things. They were just trying to manage and protect their athletes and not let them get into this quote unquote dysfunction within how their bodies were moving. So we know that is definitely individualized. Today, we want to talk about some specific tactics, but knowing that obviously it's individualized for each athlete. And again, we're talking about managing the body during race season. So again, that's kind of the overall thought process of how we discuss this. But then the other thought is defining what's a tactic versus what's a strategy. And again, like talking about how we have to consider this an individualized approach, although we're going to go through top 10 tactics, which are not obviously part of a big strategy. We're talking about them as standalone, but the reality is a strategy is a treatment paradigm or an action plan that's athlete specific. When we talk about tactics, we're talking about those individualized steps or those individual steps that can take you there. So just taking these tactics out of context of an overall strategy, you got to take that with a grain of salt, because what can work for one person doesn't always work for another person. And so with talking these tactics, we're specifically, like you alluded to, Andrew, we're going to be talking kind of from the physical therapy side of things or mechanical tactics to keeping your bodies right during race season as a triathlete. So there's the obvious things with keeping your body healthy during race season, which we're not going to address. And those are pillars like nutrition and sleep. Those are obviously huge things. So we're going to assume that those are given and that we're addressing those as athletes. But in general, we're going to talk more about like the changing tires, checking oil, getting everything in alignment. And we'll just assume for this conversation, you're already putting the proper gas in the tank and tucking your car in a garage at night, you know? So yeah, that's kind of the preface of what we're going to be discussing here.
Before I have BJ start unloading his 10 tactics, you know, the training design within TriDot already does quite a bit to build us up, to taper us off and recover us kind of around our race schedule. You know, what BJ is giving us today are tactics for taking care of our body within that TriDot training cycle. Tell us a bit how TriDot already ebbs and flows our training stress around races to keep us healthy.
So this kind of goes in line with some of those things that BJ was referring to, the things that we're making assumptions about, because having proper training prescription is critical in this, that there's a reason why triathletes have such a high occurrence of injury is because most triathletes are not doing the right training right. They are doing generic training. They're following someone else's training. They're not having training that is individualized, optimized for them. So it's critical to have the proper amount of volume, the proper amount of intensity, the proper intensity for you, the proper intensity given the environment that you're training in. There are numerous variables that go into determining what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. And as a repetitive use sport, we have a high risk of injury. So we are doing the same things over and over and over, the same motions for hours and hours and hours on end every day, every week, for months at a time. And as race day approaches, we generally are doing this more, especially those that are racing long course. The volume is increasing as race day approaches. So you're doing more, you're pounding the ground more, you're using those joints more and more, bone impact, muscular impact, all those things. There's more opportunity for things to go wrong. So part of reducing your injury risk is, again, doing optimized training that is created specifically for you, not for someone else, not for someone with a different body type or a different capacity, different absorption rate of training. So it's kind of one of those things that, as BJ talked about, it's almost an assumption that you have to talk about you're doing training that's specific for you. You're doing the right training. You're taking your medicine, not something that's been prescribed for someone else in hopes that you'll be cured. But all those are taken into consideration through TriDot's optimization process. So you'll know exactly how much volume is appropriate for you, how much intensity is appropriate, what intensity. It's all adjusted for the environment that you're training in. So you are getting that truly optimized training that's created specifically for you. And one of the claims that we have been making for years and years and years is that TriDot training is going to reduce your injury risk. We've seen that over and over. It's been documented through our preseason project and other research initiatives, that the athletes that train with TriDot have a significantly lower occurrence of injury. And that really goes back to the optimized training. Now, kind of the caveat here is we cannot, unfortunately, remove the risk of injury. We cannot remove the occurrence of injury because, again, we're still in triathlon. We're still swimming, cycling, and running for several hours every week. And given that, we are going to have injuries at certain times. There are going to be things that happen to our body. We're going to put wear on our body. And if there's too much of that, or if something happens in a unfortunate way, there an injury can occur. So we don't, unfortunately, have the ability to remove the risk of injury, but we do reduce significantly the risk of injury. And that's really where we transition over into these 10 things to what are the things that we can further mitigate that risk. It's obviously doing the right training is a huge component of that, but we are still using our joints and muscles and bones a heck of a lot. And in doing so, what can we then do to further enhance our training or enhance our recovery and reduce the risk of further injury?
No, great perspective there, John. Perfect. That nails it there. All right, BJ, let's get to the good stuff. What is tactic number one for keeping our body healthy during race season?
Yeah, so these are in no particular order. And just to kind of set the stage, when we're talking about all these tactics, like we said before, it's specific modalities, specific resets. And when we talk about resets, it's really all of these are centered towards getting you back to your proper homeostasis with regards to your autonomic nervous system. So when we talk about the autonomic nervous system, there's really two states an athlete can have, and any individual really can have. It's either you're in your sympathetic system, which is like your fight or flight system. That's the system you're using when you're performing and racing, or you're in your parasympathetic system, which is your rest and digest system. That's when you're at rest, your muscles should be at rest. And so a lot of these things, these tactics stem from, trying to address that situation where the dysfunction comes when, like, I've got an athlete coming into my clinic and he's feeling discomfort. I put him on the table. He's lying flat on his back. And yet I can see he's still holding hip flexor tone. Like, his muscles are on, they're tight, lights are on, but nobody's home, we always say. And so these resets are designed, a lot of these that we're going to discuss are designed to flip that light switch off and help the body recover that proper state of homeostasis, because then we can recover more properly, we can perform better. And so there's kind of a paradigm that all these will go into, which is called the 3R paradigm, which is reset, reinforce, reload. So as we start down this list, I'm going to kind of give you that category of, is this a reset? Okay. Like, is this helping us turn the light switch off in certain ways? Is this a reinforcement, meaning maybe it's a stretch or pattern that helps, again, reinforce that reset. So we turn the light switch off. Now, how do we keep it that way? How do we stay mobile in a functional way? And then reloading, which is kind of priming the pump, activating the right muscles so that those resets and reinforcements stick. Because if we turn something off, we can't just assume it's going to stay that way. If it's, you know, we have to retrain the body in certain ways to reinforce that patterning. So without getting too carried away, think reset, reinforce, reload when we're talking these tactics.
Hey, and I will, BJ, add in for you. I've going through 10 tactics, right? Like, we're going to hit kind of the core, the ethos of each of these. You know, there will likely be future episodes with you where we dive real deep on some of these individually. And so don't think that what you're hearing from BJ today is the depth of his knowledge on these tactics. It's just him kind of giving us an overview of the things that we can do. You know, a lot of our audience is in the middle of a race season right now. My apologies to our friends on the other side of the world who listen to the podcast, who are in their off season. Hopefully this comes in handy for you in a few months. But this is BJ just kind of giving us an overview of these 10 tactics. So, BJ, tech number one.
Yeah. So having said all that, we'll run through these pretty quick, because like you said, each and every one of these tactics is truly a podcast
episode.
Could be an
hour conversation, yeah.
In of itself. So the number one tactic, and again, these are in no particular order, but the number one tactic is breathing. Breathing is our most critical reset, which seems like a no-brainer, but breathing is so much more powerful than many of us are aware. Breathing has a lot to do with how we control our blood pH. So by releasing carbon dioxide, which is mildly acidic and a big waste product of the body, you know, that very often we become stressed and we tend to shallow breathe or stay what's called apical with our breathing, where our lungs become hyperinflated. We don't release all of that stagnant air with that CO2 out of our body. And by holding that in, it can definitely give us issues within a lower blood pH or acidic focus there. And so if we can do focused breathing, and it doesn't have to be rocket science, there's a lot of exercise paradigms that have been built around breathing because now there's such a focus and a shift towards this. We realize it's important in our industry, but it really doesn't have to be rocket science. I mean, yoga has been around for however many years, and yoga centers around this. And there's a lot of principles from yoga that are beneficial just simply because it focuses on breathing. So the more we can do focused breathing, bring our homeostasis back to where it needs to be, again, getting us back into more of that parasympathetic state or rest and digest state, we can bring our blood pH up and making it a little more alkaline, which is where it's designed to be, just on that side. So some practical tips for this. There's a lot of different techniques. Again, box breathing, 4-7-8 breathing, which is yoga-esque. Basically, it's thinking in through the nose, out through the mouth. If you want more details, Google 4-7-8 breathing or box breathing. But again, the focus is getting full exhalation, getting deep inhalation, and just taking time out to relax.
So I know Coach Joe is going to be excited to hear box breathing brought up on another podcast episode. So that was one thing she talked about just a couple of weeks ago on the podcast when we were dealing with the pre-race anxiety. And that was one of her top things to recommend was the box breathing specifically and using that as a tactic to deal with those pre-race nerves.
I was curious, BJ, as you were talking, you referenced 4-7-8 breathing. And I was like, I wonder, I mean, 4-7-8 sounds like an area code, right? I wonder what 4-7-8 is the area code for. So shout out to any of our listeners in the Macon, Georgia, or the Central Georgia area, you know, Warner Robins, Dublin, Eastman, Hawkinsville, Milledgeville, Swainsboro, Wadley, Perry. That is what Wikipedia tells me the 4-7-8 area code covers. So shout out to them. But BJ, great tip there. And I was going to ask you, you know, what that means for us as triathletes, like what does it mean to improve and be mindful about our breathing? But you gave us some practical tips right there. So that is perfect. So let's move on, BJ, to tactic number two for staying healthy during the race season.
Yeah. Tactic number two also falls in the reset category again of helping us turn things off, turning that light switch off on certain muscles that are overutilized or overworked, and they just need that reset. So the category for number two is massage. So massage involves obvious thinking of massage, of the hands-on treatment, but it also kind of envelopes what's become very popular on the market now with percussion and vibration tools. You're talking about vibration foam rollers, vibration guns. There's a lot of different things on the market. And the whole focus on this tactic is that perception drives experience. So the bottom line, like you can get into some of the research, what's there, what's not there. But the bottom line is some of these tactics like massage just feel good. And that's what it takes to get us back into our parasympathetic state. So we don't have to overthink it. And is this increasing blood flow? Is this, you know, clearing inflammatory cell markers? Yes, maybe, we're not sure. Massage actually has some of the better research behind it, although it's limited. But the bottom line is if you perceive that it feels good, it's relaxing, and you can find yourself getting back to that parasympathetic state or more restful state, it's going to be a great tactic for you. And again, a lot of these tactics or these tools on the market are driven more by marketing than science. But in my own anecdotal evidence, being in the clinic for the past 17 years, is that they really do simply work. And just to get more practical, I'm not endorsed by Hyperice, but I really like Hyperice products a lot. I've just vetted a lot of different products in the clinic, and these are the ones we keep coming back to. But the Hyperice vibration foam rollers work really well. Foam rolling seems to be another staple that kind of falls into this category, and it's definitely a valuable reset. Side note on foam rolling, it's not always a more is better approach. A lot of times people think they just have to completely kill themselves, and not that it's not uncomfortable at times, but you're never truly lengthening tissue when you're foam rolling. There's studies on rolling your IT band that to actually deform or change that tissue, 1% difference in length, it would take up to 2,000 pounds of force. So nobody's truly administering that through a foam roller. What foam rolling is truly doing is it's inhibiting tone. It's, again, bringing us back into that parasympathetic state. So a little bit can go a long way here. Okay. Again, I love Hyperice products. I use the Hypervolt vibration gun made by Hyperice.
Which John and I both have, I believe.
Yeah, it's obviously been very popular in the market. It's a little more quiet. It's a little more durable. I've used these day in and day out in the clinic, and they last. They hold up very well, and they just seem to work. So that's kind of what I've stuck to. But there's a lot of different tools in the market that do the job. It's just finding something in that category with the massage tactic that feels good. And if it's feeling good and it's feeling like you're more released, relaxed, following, you're on the right track.
I will say too, BJ. So I mean, John and I both have a Hyperice gun that we both use frequently. Definitely enjoy it. I don't have a vibrating percussive foam roller, and so that is very intriguing to add into the repertoire. My newest pickup, I've really been enjoying our friends Metadyne that sell Two Toms products that we talked about just a bit ago. They also have Add-A-Day recovery products, and I got their little Add-A-Day trio of kind of massaging balls. There's like a spiky one, there's a softer round one, that there's kind of a couple different shapes, and man, those are really great either leaning against the wall or laying on the floor, or just rolling the feet or legs over them. Those little balls have really been great for me to kind of get in some spots that my foam roller can't, and I've been enjoying them. So definitely, when you go to Metadyne.com and check out Two Toms products, make sure you also look at their line of they have a variety of foam rollers and different canes and sticks to help you get in all those nooks and crannies and kind of apply a massage to those spots, which I know Dr. BJ Leeper endorses. So, BJ, tactic number three.
Yeah, and another reset in this same category. And just remember, as we're talking about these resets, a lot of people will get in that mode of massage, foam rolling, even this next tactic that we're going to discuss, that is your fix, that is your solution. But I always tell my athletes I work with that the reset, even though it gets the most press, it feels sometimes the best once it's been performed, the reset will never fix you. The reset is a step. Again, it's one of those tactics that's part of that overall strategy. But if you're only hitting the reset button and you're never reinforcing or reloading that reset, it will never fix you. You'll have to continue that reset for the rest of your life. And some people are okay with that. Like, hey, let me schedule my weekly massage and I'll just keep doing that. And that's fine. But just know that the disclaimer is the reset does not fix you. It's not the be all end all, but it is a valuable part, obviously. So number three in that category of resets is compression boots. So compression, again, another modality that it's a slight cousin to massage, because in my opinion, the reason that compression boots really work is because they're giving that manual input that again can be inhibitory. And quite honestly, and this might be a spoiler alert, there's not a lot of research with compression boots. But if you want my honest opinion of why they work, I honestly think it's no more than just the simple fact that it makes you slow down. You put them on, you get off your feet. And for those 15 to 20 minutes, you have to stop and take a break and maybe breathe a little bit. Who knows?
So true.
So in my opinion, like, hey, if you need to drop a grand to force yourself to take a 15 to 20 minute break every other day, honestly, if that's what it takes, I'd say it's money well spent, because it is an important part of it. It can be an important tactic for a lot of people. So again, it's in that category of massage to a certain degree.
Just pour a glass of wine, kick back in your recovery boots, throw on the Tread Out podcast, and have yourself a Thursday evening, right?
Yeah, and I could sell you some restraints for about the same price if you want to pay me $1,000 to give you that, just to force you to sit down and to chill. But they do feel great. Again, perception drives experience. If they feel great to you and everybody dials in their specific pressure, they can be very effective. But everyone's like, well, what kind should I get? What pressure should I use? Again, it's totally a feel thing. And and there's different types of brands. Again, I'm a big fan of, in the clinic, I've used Normatec a lot. We've used a lot of different systems in the clinic, and we've landed with Normatec, which, again, I'm going to sound like a Hyperice rep because Hyperice just acquired Normatec a couple of years ago. But again, they just work. They hold up. We've used them every single day, multiple times a day, and they still withstand the test of time. So shout out to Normatec. I feel like they're some of the best in the market, but there's a lot of systems that do the trick.
All right, Dr. BJ Leeper, what is tactic number four for staying healthy during race season?
So tactic number four is one of my favorites. This is one I've used a lot, and it's dry needling. So I'm sure this will be John's favorite as well. But dry needling is honestly one of the deepest reset tools we have in our industry.
It's not talked about as nearly as much as some of the others.
Right. And obviously it's something you have to seek a professional to receive, but it's something that's been around for thousands of years. We've basically, in the United States, we've adopted it from ancient Eastern medicine techniques that have been around for centuries. And we've in essence westernized them, but basically what dry needling is it's taking a thin monofilament needle that's just like hair thin. It's made of stainless steel, and it's nothing like a typical hypodermic needle with a reservoir. So we're not delivering any or administering any fluid when we dry needle. And honestly, it would take about 20 of them tip to tip to fit on the size of the point of a typical hypodermic needle. So they're very thin. A lot of people refer to them as painless needles because very rarely do you feel that insertional pain like you would with a typical needle. But it's utilized in a treatment paradigm within the physical therapy world where we're trying to reset again, flip that light switch off on certain muscles where the lights are on, but nobody's home. We're hitting specific trigger points potentially in the body where they're being abnormally utilized and these muscles are very high strung. They're not at rest when you're at rest. And we're basically going in and manually, for lack of a better analogy, we're going in and manually flipping those lights off. There's, technically speaking, there's actually a chemical called acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter that when you needle, it can sometimes evoke a twitch response and you clear that chemical from the synapse and then it returns that muscle back to its resting state. And the reason I love this tool is that from a practitioner's side of things, I can get a response with someone's body in a session of dry needling that may have taken me 3 sessions of just using my hands.
Wow.
So it's very effective. It's very quick. That reset can happen. Again, it's not all about that one reset being the be all end all, but it's a highly effective reset technique to get your body back online in that normal homeostasis very quickly. So for individuals that aren't able to achieve that through their self tactics, like foam rolling, some of these other manipulation techniques, self-mobilization techniques, dry needling can be a huge tool in the toolbox if you can find a practitioner that lines up with you. And it's not for everybody, but it can definitely be a huge tool. And a lot of times we'll stimulate the needle while it's in the muscle, what's called intramuscular stimulation, like with an electrical current, like you've heard of TENS, a transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. We'll actually hook up TENS or electrical current to the needle as it's indwelling in the muscle to evoke an even stronger reset response. So it sounds like Frankenstein type of stuff, but but honestly, I can honestly say, because I've used it for years, it's very, very powerful.
So the first time I experienced that, and BJ said I would be a big fan because I guess a fairly well-known aversion would be a mild word to needles. I don't like shots. I don't like hypodermics. I freak out and get clammy if there's one even in the room. But I will say it. So the first time I had it, I was having this back, shoulder, neck pain that is kind of chronic for me. I spend a lot of time at a computer hunched over with terrible posture. And that's probably where it's coming from. And so from time to time, it gets bad. I go in for treatment. And first time, I was face down on the mat. They were doing the massage and different things. And then it was almost like a grin. Hey, you don't have an aversion to needles, do you? And I was like, well, actually, I have a very high aversion to needles. And next thing I know, I'm feeling just these little little more like thumps on my back shoulder blade area. It was not a bad experience at all. So I will say for my fellow needle phobes, this is not eliminated from the repertoire of things that you can do. So for me, and not only was it not a bad experience, it worked. It really helped to loosen up those muscles in my neck and back, and I was able to sit comfortably. I was able to ride an arrow because, like, for me, it gets so bad that I can't ride my bike because I'm in a it becomes painful to hold my neck up or hold my head up. So that was great to have that in the arsenal of things to deal with that, in addition to doing things like fixing my posture and other things. But
I just want to know, BJ, and this is probably a question for a longer conversation on dry needling, but I'm just curious, like who had that idea to even figure out that a very, very, very tiny thin needle inserted in a very, very, very specific place in a certain way could reset your entire muscular system? That's just, like it's, there's certain foods, right? There's certain like plants that you can eat that it's like, who is the first person to think, oh, what if we cook this and eat it? Like I have that same wondering about dry needling, but that's probably for a deeper conversation. So we're going to move on to tactic number 5, which is what?
Well, and this kind of goes in line with dry needling to a certain extent, and to kind of follow up, not to get too long winded with this, but to follow up your question right there, Andrew, a lot of these things we utilize in westernized medicine or in the United States, even with recovery resets, like we're talking, have stemmed from ancient Eastern medicine. So with Eastern medicine, I'm sure a lot of these things started with just trial and error. Let's try these crazy things. And what's persisted over the course of time? I mean, we're talking about techniques that have been vetted for thousands of years, and they've stood the test of time in Eastern medicine. And so there's probably something to it. Now, a lot of these things, we have no research whatsoever, solid research that is truly to say, like, we know for a fact it's doing this, but it's anecdotal. We know that it's been used and it's withstood the test of time. So if it's been vetted for a couple thousand years, you know, there's probably some merit to it, and there's probably some value in it, even if we're not 100% sure what exactly it's doing. So this next tactic is in line with that, and it's acupressure. And very recently, or more, this has kind of been more of a trend recently on the market, you're seeing a lot with acupressure mats. And I was kind of skeptical of this a few years ago, but I've actually tried utilizing one personally for the last few months even, and been more consistent with it, and it just works. And so what these mats are, acupressure mats, if you're not familiar with them, it's like, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's like several hundred evenly small spaced plastic points. Think of like a bed of nails made out of plastic Legos. So it's fine. Literally this mat of small plastic points where you lie on it, stand on it, do different things on it, where these plastic points kind of gently dig into your skin, and it forces that reset. It goes along these meridians in the body where, again, like needling, you're trying to attack a tissue that lights are on, nobody's home. It can get you back into your parasympathetic state. A lot of times in at first it's a little bit intense and you breathe through it, and then all of a sudden you enter into this parasympathetic reset. So there's different forms on the market. I think one of the first in the United States was called the Shakti mat. And I actually have one made by ProSource Fit, but lying on these 10 to 15 minutes right before bed, it gives you an opportunity to then focus on your breathing as you're doing it. I've actually noticed my recovery, my sleep is much more improved when I have time to do that. Again, a highly valuable technique that's not very expensive. It's a small tool. And again, it's something you can use daily. You don't need a provider to administer dry needling. It works along those same kind of concepts, but it's obviously more superficial. It takes some time to get used to them. At first, you sometimes have to start with like a thin t-shirt on, or if you're doing it with your feet, thin socks, and then gradually you get accustomed to it. You get the ability to relax a little bit better. You can go just bare skin on the mats, but Yeah, I absolutely love mine. I've been using it for a while, prescribing it for a while. So it's a great tactic.
So BJ, this is one I was less familiar with. So as you were started talking, I looked it up, and kind of ironically, the top two listed on Amazon are Shakti and ProSourceFit. So is it just spending time on the mat, or is it something more like a foam roller where we need to be doing something? You know, is it just spending time on there, allowing it to do its thing?
Yeah, it's very passive. So it is allowing that input and then allowing yourself to literally breathe through it and focus relaxation. So there is a part of it that's conscious relaxation. It's like, I always joke with patients, like, just relax harder. And when you say those cues, it almost keys them up. They're like, oh no. And, you know, triathletes we're often wired, like, we got to do something. A lot of this, what we're talking about, is what you don't do, what your muscles are not doing. So how do you get them to that state? And again, the acupressure mat is just, it's another tool like that. And maybe it's like what we talked about with compression boots. Maybe it's the simple fact that you're taking a break. You're focused on breathing. You're focused on doing something that's different than the typical stressors of your life. But I do think there's something a little more to it. It's, again, similar concept. It's not rocket science. It's literally just evoking a different stimulus to the brain. And then your brain has to decide, oh, what am I going to do with this stimulus? And then again, a lot of times it can flip the light switch off on those peripheral muscles and just get you into a deeper state. But if you tense up with it and you hold your breath and you're not able to reset, relax through it, it may not be a good tactic for you. Just like if you're really averse to needles and the thought of being needled and being in that situation is very stressful, it may not be the right reset for you. But if you can kind of coach yourself through it, give your body a different stimulus that it's not used to, it often can be very powerful.
So I don't think my laptop will work with this one. So maybe that's a better one for me. So yeah. $30, I think we're going to see an uptick, and there are lots of fun colors to select from on Amazon. So
absolutely.
They do not look comfortable, and that almost makes me want to try it even more. Honestly, I feel like after this recording, I'll be purchasing one of those, and I'll be purchasing a vibrating foam roller just to try both of those out. So moving us on to tactic number 6 for staying healthy during the race season.
Yeah, so these next three tactics will kind of roll through. These are all in the category of reinforcement, and most people would consider them like in the stretching bucket. But tactic number 6 is thoracic spine mobility, or what we often refer to as T-spine mobility, and that's your mid-back. We just finished up camp a couple months ago. We were screening about 60, 70 of our Tri-Dot ambassadors. And with our movement screening, kind of research data collection, we were finding that a lot of our triathletes, and I kind of knew this going into it, but we've validated it, that a lot of our triathletes have poor trunk rotation and rolling patterns. Where we lose that mobility through our thoracic spine, which is one of the primary areas that we move with rotation. And obviously, considering the sport of triathlon, we're hunched over arrow, we're running, we're driven in this sagittal plane of pattern, which is front to back. And if we lose this ability to rotate, it affects how we breathe, it affects our posture, it affects how we pull with our arm, pulling through the water. And so it can definitely put the parking brake on our bodies and inhibit our performance. So one of my favorite techniques or favorite drills for this is called the open book. If you're not familiar with it, you can Google it, YouTube it. Open book focuses on focused thoracic spine mobility and breathing. And then also another great stretch, catch-all stretch that attacks this area is called the Bretzel stretch. And this was actually characterized by Brett Jones, who's a very well-known kettlebell instructor. He's worked with Pavel, which is another big name in the kettlebell industry. I think he's with, I think Brett Jones is now with a company called Strong First. But it's another great drill, a Bretzel. They patterned it after his name, but it's another drill where you get rotation, you get hip mobility all in the same time. It's kind of one of those catch-all stretches that helps you focus. And again, if you're not able to breathe through it, you got to coach yourself through the breathing, because if you're holding your breath, you know you're still in your sympathetic state. So that's another great one that checks a lot of boxes. And again, attacking our T-spine mobility is another big tactic.
Like you said, we'll kind of roll through tactics 6, 7, and 8 because they all kind of go hand in hand along the same lines. But I will say this about thoracic spine mobility. At the time we're publishing this podcast, a few weeks ago, we had triathlon legend and Tri-Dot coach Mark Allen in town here in the Dallas area, and we were filming some strength exercises with Mark. And it was a really cool shoot because he was in town for a few days. We were filming some stuff at the pool. We were filming some stuff with Tri-Dot coach John Mayfield was running Mark's teleprompter, and I was running a few cameras. Tri-Dot's own Matt Bach was running a camera. We had Tri-Dot coach Elizabeth James, Tri-Dot coach Joanna Namey, Tri-Dot coach Jeff Rains, and Jake Boer, the son of Tri-Dot founder Jeff Boer, all on camera as athletes doing some strength exercises. And basically, it's all of the strength exercises within Tri-Dot. If you sign on to Tri-Dot with the new Mark Allen edition, when you have your swim drills, your run drills, your bike drills, your strength drills come across your daily workout, it is Coach Mark Allen on the screen coaching you through how to do those drills. And BJ, you collaborated with Mark on the strength portions. You know, all of the drills that are on there for strength were approved by you. The scripts were approved by you to make sure we're coaching people on how to do these things correctly from a physical therapy standpoint. But I say all that to say, when it comes to thoracic spine mobility, I almost made the joke. I did make the joke halfway through the shoot that we should have had a drinking game where every time Mark had to say the word thoracic, we all did a shot, because it seemed like every eight drills, Mark had to say thoracic. So it's a word that you don't hear outside of the PT strength lingo. So it definitely stands out. But I'm having flashbacks to that video shoot here as you're talking about thoracic spine mobility, because that word was just thrown around on that set so often. So anyway, with that story and anecdote, on to tactic number seven.
Yeah, number seven in the same line of thinking is it's hip mobility. Again, for the same reasons we mentioned before with T-spine mobility, we tend to lose hip mobility in triathlon because we get so sagittally plane driven, and a syndrome that we see quite often in the triathlon world is called lower crossed syndrome, which basically means that the fronts of your hips and your hip flexors get very tight, your lower back, your paraspinals get very tight. And this cross chain patterning that's dysfunctional with this lower cross syndrome is the exact opposite pattern that you want to have. So the natural pattern we want to have lies within our king and queen, which is the glutes and your core. So think of this diagonal across your pelvis where the king and the queen, your glutes and your core, are the primary your body needs to be utilizing. And then all of a sudden those become inhibited and you get out of position and the exact opposite diagonal takes over of your lower back and your hip flexors. So we know that this is an issue. So as a tactic for reinforcing the correct patterns, we need to think about addressing these areas. So there's a lot of different hip flexor, hip external rotator stretches on the market. You can Google a lot of them. Again, the Bretzel stretch that I was referencing earlier catches a lot of this. But the focus needs to be on putting yourself in a position to attack these muscles through some light, contract, relax stretching. Remember, it's not a grip it and rip it philosophy. It's light, maybe 3 by 30 second holds where you're focused on your breathing, because if you're holding your breath, you're probably creating more tension than releasing. And so if we can kind of hone in on the hips, it's a huge factor.
Dr. BJ Leeper, tactic number eight.
Number eight, another reinforcement pattern along the same lines is ankle mobility. So ankle mobility is another thing we screened at the Ambassador Camp with a lot of our triathletes, where we see a lot of dysfunction there because, you know, obviously within triathlon, we're doing a lot of running. If we don't maintain fundamental ankle mobility, and primarily we're talking about the mobility of what's called dorsiflexion, which is thinking in the foot, it's bringing your toes towards your nose. So the ability to translate your tibia or your lower leg over your foot, that ankle mobility is critical, because if you don't have that proper mobility and if there's stiffness there, it's like a pipeline. Your brain is trying to communicate to the muscles in your lower limb to propel you forward and push you forward. And if there's stiffness in the ankle, your brain says, nope, wait, I'm not going to communicate normally to those muscles. We're going to put the parking brake on, and you become inhibited and your capacity to actually move more efficiently becomes diminished. So this can lead to foot problems, shin splints, issues all the way up into the hip and back. So we need to clear ankles. That's another huge tactic.
It reminds me, BJ, of when we talked on the podcast before about how when you have an injury, you know, the where you feel injured, where you are having the pain and the discomfort, isn't necessarily the spot that originates that injury. And so like you're saying, if you have stiff ankles, I mean, that can cause injuries all the way up to your lower back. And the problem isn't in your back, the problem is in your ankle. And you only find that out through a screening. And so it's really fascinating. I want to let people know our next episode with you, at the time this podcast is coming out, we are a month or so away from our next TriDot staff get together. And at our next TriDot staff get together, BJ, you're going to do a functional movement screening on all of us as staff. And I know you're going to find some stuff wrong with my thoracic spine mobility, my hip mobility, and my ankle mobility. And I am excited to quantify it. And then we're going to do a podcast episode where myself and some of our staff are on an episode with you, just talking about what we learned from the process of being screened. And so I'm really pumped for that. All three of those tactics you just gave us, you know, really important parts of the body to pay attention to and keep healthy. Moving us along, we got two left. Tactic number nine. What is it, BJ?
Yeah, number nine and actually number 10 are kind of two practical tactics that I think if you can keep these as part of your routine, I think you check a lot of boxes. Like you alluded to, Andrew, you know, we're going to screen our entire staff because screening is in essence the foundation of how we need to direct some of these tactics. Because within the sport of triathlon, very often, you know, we're trying to cash checks that our body can't cover. So we're literally trying to just check fundamental movement capacity within our bodies to make sure that what we're putting on top of that is not going to blow us up with all of our training. So number nine is a practical way. And I know we have a lot of listeners that are involved with this tactic, but it's yoga. And really yoga is another form of reinforcement. Again, it focuses on breathing. It's got that specificity. And you're exploring movements that you're not naturally getting in the course of your normal swim, bike, and run training. So again, yoga can check a lot of those boxes and reinforce those fundamental patterns we need. Most specifically, and there's a lot of different poses, and I'm not a yoga expert by any means, but literally there's a toe touch pattern we look at a lot in my world as far as screening goes. And if you know of any, if you've been around yoga long enough, you know that the sun salutation, for example, is a big move where it looks like that. You're reaching to the floor, then you're moving your spine through a myriad of progression. And if you can't perform a sun salutation through that normal natural flow, and if you don't know what that is, just again, Google it. But if you can't go through that natural progression of a sun salutation without feeling like your head's going to explode, because you're holding your breath, and you know, there's your number one tactic right there. Like you don't have to be a rocket science individual to know, like, hey, you got to explore that. Your body needs to be able to own it. It's a very fundamental pattern, and that becomes your exercise. Like that could become your only tactic you focus on, and you'll check a lot of boxes just by going through that 3 to 5 minutes daily, focusing on some breathing with it. It's a huge tactic that I think gets overlooked.
What one of my new dreams, BJ, I know TriDot coach Kurt Madden has talked on the podcast fairly recently about how he's been just lately getting into yoga, and specifically hot yoga is his go-to. And so what one of my dreams right now is to be in San Diego and go attend a hot yoga session with TriDot coach Kurt Madden. I know TriDot ambassador and Betty squad member Valerie from Houston area, one of Coach Joanna Namie's athletes, House of Royals on Instagram is her Instagram handle, and she is very active on there. She's been posting a lot about going to goat yoga, and so how whatever form of yoga appeals to you, it has BJ Lieber's endorsement of being a tactic for keeping your body healthy during the race season. So BJ, with that, let's move on to tactic number 10. What do we got?
Yeah, tactic number 10, and this enters into the reloading category. So again, we started this segment talking about reset, reinforce, reload. We've talked about tactics for both reset and reinforcement, but reloading is one that most people put in the category of strength. But reloading is one of those tactics that will literally make these things stick. So for example, you're tackling your T-spine mobility, you're tackling your hip mobility. If you don't do anything different, you're probably going to go back to that same stiffness you were holding before. So tactic number 10 is in the activation drill department, specifically with glute activation drills. So glute activation drills is our 10th tactic. And really the focus here is, again, when we talked about the king and queen of the body and the pelvis, the king is the glute. The glute is the powerhouse. The glute is a driving force of not only moving us forward when we run, but also stabilizing our pelvis, which is the platform that all of our limbs work off of our core. So once you've hit the reset button, reinforce proper fundamental mobility, we have to make sure our glutes are activating properly, especially in the height and peak of our training intensity for race season. So for me, with attacking glutes and activating glutes, I'm a huge fan of single leg bridges, where I really like to modify the athlete's pattern by making sure they're like hugging their opposite knee to their chest as they're performing that single leg bridge on one side. So they're not getting into that lower cross pattern. They're not getting into their lower back, because the lower back is a big cheat of this proper single leg bridge. You've heard me on the podcast before talk about single leg deadlifts. I'm a huge fan of single leg deadlifts. When you've earned the right to load, you've got an adequate hip hinge, you can start loading within a deadlift and in a single leg to expose asymmetry, using a kettlebell or dumbbell from a modified height potentially. So single leg deadlifts are a big key for this. And then another, again, this is an entire podcast in and of itself, but a Turkish getup is another fundamental move within activation reloading that, if you can take yourself through a fundamental Turkish getup, and there's a lot of steps to the Turkish getup to do them correctly. Again, if you've not been familiar with the Turkish getup, it's a lot of movement centered from the kettlebell community, but YouTube it, walk through it, take your time as you go through it, but do it properly. Turkish getups will check a lot of boxes. So all those tactics, all those drills can help influence glute activity. And it's a huge step. And kind of wrapping a bow on some of these last couple tactics we've addressed, if you remember nothing from this conversation, if you just remember the simple tool of a sun salutation followed by a Turkish getup, those are two huge critical movements that if you did nothing else other than those two movements a few times a week, if your body starts checking the boxes on covering those movements, you're going to be doing yourself a lot of good with regards to keeping your body healthy. So those are kind of practical tips. Again, all these tactics can look very different for different individuals, and some people may respond better to some over others, but practically speaking, there's a lot of power in those last two tactics we talked about.
So BZ, to wrap up our main set, are these tactics good for everyone? Should we all be doing all of them? Should we incorporate those that seem to work for us, or how can we best implement these tactics?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think it kind of goes back to what we started out talking about with tactic versus a strategy. I think ultimately we need a strategy to plug these tactics into. So your strategy is obviously going to be very individualized to you. But I think in general, I think we just need to explore different positions. I think the biggest take home from a lot of this is explore different positions that you're not getting with your natural swim, bike, and run training with triathlon, and focus primarily on taking your body to a state of reset and relaxation. If you're getting your body into your parasympathetic state because you've been so keyed up with life, training, racing, all these things, your body needs that baseline. It needs to come back to that natural baseline of your parasympathetic state. So a lot of this, it's really just exploration. It's individual. Some tactics are going to work well for you over others. And once you find something, you land on something, stay consistent. We've talked all the time with training, it's not about perfection. It's just about consistency. It's not about doing all 10 of these tactics. It's simply about finding a few that work well for you and be consistent.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Hello, Coach EJ here. Andrew gave me the reins for today's cool down, and I'm really happy that I get to share a little bit with you about the information that BJ outlined today. Gosh, he just has an expansive wealth of knowledge, and I really hope that you found the information today helpful as we all work to stay healthy during the race season. Now, not to brag too much, but I was feeling pretty good about the fact that there was only one of BJ's 10 tactics that I don't currently implement. And that was number five, that acupuncture mat. I might have to give that a try someday, but right now, no thank you. But every other tactic is part of either my weekly or monthly routine. Now, some of the tactics I implement on my own, such as getting in the Normatec compression boots and doing either an at-home yoga session or attending a class, but a lot of the items he mentioned are ones that I heavily rely on my team to help me with too. I work with a fantastic strength coach who not only designs my gym sessions to increase muscular strength, but each workout starts with mobility and activation drills. Things like targeting ankle, hip, and thoracic spine mobility, and then that all-important glute activation. I'm also a big advocate for regular maintenance work, so I seek the help of a massage therapist and chiropractor frequently. This includes some dry needling too. This really helps keep everything moving as it should. To perform your best, your body needs to be moving at its best. Now, you may not need to implement as many as I currently do, but I'm sure that there are at least one or two things that you could either start or be better about actually doing to keep yourself healthy this season. And we all hope that you do stay healthy so that we can see you at a race soon.
That's it for today, folks. I want to thank Dr. BJ Leeper and John Mayfield for talking us through keeping our body healthy during race season. Shout out to our friends at Two Toms and Delta G for partnering with us on today's episode. Go to Metadyne.com to pick up some Two Toms today. And when you do, use promo code TRIDOT for 20% off your order. And to experience Delta G ketones for yourself, head to DeltaGketones.com to learn more about fueling with ketone esters and to book your free 15-minute consultation. When you place an order there, use TRIDOT 20 for 20% off your Super Fuel ketone drinks. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.